This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Welcome to Farming Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. On today's show, Keith Hubbard springs forward in his Star Talk report that highlights daylight savings time. Trevor, forest specialist from Wayne Conservation, invites us to a pancake breakfast and self-guided maple tour to sap houses. Stephanie Phillips continues her conversation with Michelle Poprowski at the Catskill Fish Hatchery in Livingston Manor. All of that coming up on today's Farming Country. But first, news headlines from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Louise Schiavone. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is pressing Haiti's prime minister to agree on a political transition in that country. But amid the chaos there, the prime minister is unable to get to Haiti because gangs have shut down the country's international airports. NPR's Michelle Kellerman has details.
Secretary Blinken and his aides have been working the phones, talking to Prime Minister Ariel Henry, as well as leaders of CARICOM, a regional group that's been pressing Henry to step aside and agree on a political transition. State Department spokesman Matthew Miller says in a statement that the current situation is, in his words, untenable. And he says the U.S. wants Henry to support a transition plan that would lead Haiti to elections and to the deployment of a long-awaited international force to help Haiti's police. Henry was in Kenya to finalize plans for that Kenyan-led force when the latest violence erupted. The gangs now won't let him back to Haiti. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
Authorities in Ukraine said two people, including a teenager, have been killed in Russian artillery attacks today. Russia, meanwhile, is saying it shot down a Ukrainian fighter jet and destroyed a wave of drones over several regions. Yesterday, the president of Turkey said he was willing to host a peace summit. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky rejected the offer. President Biden and former President Trump will both campaign in Georgia today ahead of that state's Tuesday presidential primary. NPR Stephen Fowler has more on why the state is important in the upcoming election.
Biden and Trump will rally their supporters about 70 miles apart in Georgia today after 12,000 votes separated them in 2020. The events essentially kick off the pivot to the general election after Trump's final major challenger dropped out this week and come before Tuesday's primary election. Georgia is one of a handful of swing states that will determine which of these men wins in November. It's also a state that showcases some of the pair's biggest obstacles to winning, like Trump's criminal indictments and non-white voters' dissatisfaction with Biden's agenda. Stephen Fowler, NPR News, Atlanta.
Some Alabama fertility clinics have lifted a hold on in vitro fertilization and are now back to work after the state's Republican governor signed a bill into law to protect IVF access. Operations were sidelined after the state Supreme Court ruled that frozen embryos should have legal status as children. Citizens called on their state legislature to remedy the situation. Dr. Beth Malizia co-owns Alabama's largest IVF facility. She says the situation greatly added to the stress of infertility.
The Alabama Supreme Court just increased their stress and anxiety, but they rose to the occasion, got involved. There were hundreds of patients at the courthouse.
The issue cut across party lines. This is NPR News.
Welcome back to Farming Country. I'm your host, Rosie Starr. On today's show, Stephanie Phillips continues her conversation with Michelle Poprowski at the Catskill Fish Hatchery in Livingston Manor. In this segment, Now You Know, we'll hear about raising trout. Then Trevor, forest specialist from Wayne Conservation, invites us to join a self-guided maple tour for pancakes and sap houses. But first, here is Keith Hubbard with this week's Star Talk report. Thank you for joining us on Radio Catskill for this week's locally produced Farm and Country.
Farm and Country. I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. It's the beginning of March, and that means it's time we set our clocks forward 1 hour. Tomorrow morning at 2 a.m. marks the start of daylight saving time, and we will spring forward by setting our clocks ahead. While that means we will lose an hour of sleep tonight, it also means we will see more daylight during our waking hours. Daylight saving time does not increase the length of the day. That is set by the rotation of the Earth. What daylight saving time does increase is the amount of time we are awake during daylight hours. This morning, the sun rose around 6:15 a.m., but tomorrow, the sun will rise around 7:15 a.m. The modern concept of daylight saving time came in 1895 when George Hudson proposed a 2-hour time shift. It wasn't until the outbreak of World War I that daylight saving time was adopted as an energy-saving measure, shifting the clocks by 1 hour. Germany adopted the system in 1915, Britain in 1916, and the United States followed in 1918. In the U.S., daylight saving time lasted about 7 months before being repealed. It returned for good during World War II, again as an energy-saving measure. The original start date of daylight saving time was the last Sunday in April. The current start date of the second Sunday in March was adopted in 2007. Remember to spring forward tonight and set your clocks forward 1 hour before going to bed. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard, reminding you to keep looking up.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr in Honesdale, Pennsylvania, and in our studios, I'm speaking online with Trevor. He's with the Wayne Conservation District in Honesdale, Pennsylvania. And we're going to talk about a very special event that's coming up in mid-March. Please, Trevor, introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about what you do at your organization, and then we'll get on to this beautiful Maple Tour event.
Sure. Thank you for having me. So, yeah, my name is Trevor Tuchidlowski, and I am the forest specialist at the Wayne Conservation District. My responsibilities at the district have quite a bit of variation, but essentially I'm responsible for providing Wayne County residents with free forestry consultation. And that could vary. It could be anything from as simple as tree identification on someone who has a quarter of an acre wooded lot, or it could be something as large scale as helping to lay out a timber harvest. Anything that has to do with trees is the simple way to put it.
So I guess that's why you're on this project of a Wayne County Maple Tour. Tell us about this tour that's coming up for March 16th and 17th.
Sure. So the Maple Tour is an event that's been going on for quite some time now, but it's a cooperative effort between the Wayne Conservation District, the Northeastern PA Maple Producers Association, and Penn State Extension. And the event has taken a few different forms over the last few years. But this year, as you said, it's March 16th and 17th. It's always the third weekend of March. And this year we're doing a self-guided tour. We do hope to bring a bus back in the future. Due to the conditions, we are going to be doing a self-guided tour. And on this event, you can see 12 different sap houses that have quite a bit of variety to what you could expect there, from hobbyists to very large scale, almost industrial groups. And aside from the sap houses, you can also visit 3 different pancake breakfasts that source maple syrup from these local producers in the Northeast PA Maple Producers Association. So quite a bit to do over the course of 2 days.
Because it's self-guided, it can be a family event with children and educational. Describe the properties and the environment that people will be experiencing on this tour.
It's definitely very family friendly, and you can expect quite a bit of variation on really every property that you visit. But as I mentioned before, there's 12 different members that are on the tour. So it's not just limited to the people that I'm mentioning here. But, you know, you'll experience anything from small scale hobbyists like Sticky Dog Sap House, that's run in a residential community in Cobbs Lake under George Budman. And his operation is relatively small. I believe that they have about a little bit over 50 buckets that they set out. And they carry the buckets over to his sap house, which is located actually relatively close to his home. And it's a small community effort that people get involved in there. he's definitely on the smaller side of operations. And then, of course, you have other groups like Journey's End Farm, which is a little bit more of an intermediate size, where I believe they are a third generation farm where maple isn't the only thing that they do. They also do other forms of agriculture that aren't just limited to agroforestry, but they do things with wood-fired evaporators and pretty extensive operation. But then, of course, you have other larger groups which do extend more to the industrial side of things, and that would be Pocono Mountain Maple, where they have over 25,000 taps and are bringing in enough sap to justify boiling it down and storing it in 55-gallon drums once it's eventually rendered down into maple syrup. A lot of different things to expect on the tour, and that's why it's important to hit a lot of different locations, because there's a lot to see.
Do you think that the sap is actually flowing now and on March 16th? Is the weather cooperating at this time of the year?
I certainly hope that it will be cooperating in March. It's a little bit hard to say because over the last few years, it seems like the sap season has been getting pushed back earlier and earlier. The reason for that is the syrup producers rely on very cold nights that go below freezing and then warm days. And that temperature fluctuation is what drives the sap between the crown of the tree and its root system during those changes. So that being said, it's not necessarily a timing thing. It's more of a temperature thing, at the very least when it comes to this particular season. There's other factors that would prevent people from doing the same process in the late spring and summer, but we won't get into that now. So hopefully, as long as things are relatively normal for March, and we are experiencing those warm spring days but cool nights, we should be having quite a bit of flow. And of course, that sap will then be turned into syrup. As of right now, things have been going relatively smoothly, and there's a lot of people who have already tapped their trees and have harvested their sap and are changing that down, boiling it down into maple syrup at this time. So hopefully the season will last quite a bit longer, but that's up to Mother Nature to decide.
I understand that on March 16th, there's a pancake breakfast that's part of the tour. Tell us a little bit about that and a website for more information.
The Maple Tour has always tried to incorporate these pancake breakfasts, which they're set up at three different locations this year. One of which is going to be the Damascus Township Community Center. And the second one is the American Legion Post 964. And then the Newfoundland Moravian Church is also going to be hosting one as well. Each of these locations varies a little bit as to when they'll be hosting their pancake breakfast, in addition to the not only the time, but the date as well. And all of this information can be found on our website at wayneconservation.com. If you go over to the top bar, you will see the forestry section. And if you hit the drop-down tab, you will see the Maple Tour listed under there. And in that spot, you will find our digital flyer, which is constantly being updated. We try to keep things as paper-free as much as we can. And also, it gives us the added benefit if there are new sap houses that want to join the tour last minute. We could throw them on the website very, very quickly and get that all updated for people who are looking to participate. Aside from that, if you have any questions about it, you can certainly give me a call. Again, my name is Trevor, and our phone number is 570-253-0930.
Trevor, it all sounds really wonderful, and the fact that it benefits the community makes it even better. Is there anything you'd like to add to this conversation before we close?
I think that just about sums it up. I mean, the Maple Tour is it's an excellent opportunity for people to get out and start enjoying the warmer days of spring and learn a little bit and have some samples and some other sugar products that will make your day a little bit more sweet. And then, of course, if you have any other questions about conservation in Wayne County or the surrounding areas, feel free to give either us or your local conservation district a call. And there's plenty of technicians who are free and available to come out and help you with anything that you might be in service of.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us about this beautiful community event. Thank you, Trevor.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.
Good morning. This is Stephanie Phillips with Farm and Country. This morning, I'm in Livingston Manor to interview Michelle Poprowski, at the Catskill Fish Hatchery. I'll be looking at tanks that hold about 600,000 brown trout of various sizes, in addition to rainbow trout and brook trout. Michelle will tell you about it. Michelle, can you describe the tanks that you have for your fish?
Right, so they're different sizes based on the size of the fish. Our troughs upstairs where the eggs are put once they have developed their eyes and they're going to hatch out into, those are made of fiberglass. The water's running through those troughs at 5 gallons per minute. We are a flow-through system, so none of our water is being recycled, so the water that enters is leaving immediately. It does get reused over some of our facility grounds, but it's not actually pumped and recirculated back to a tank. It's just flow through. So we have the fiberglass tanks in the building here that the smaller fish are raised in, 13 feet long by about a foot wide, and there's only about 6 inches of water in them. So they're pretty small. We put roughly 24,000 fish in those. They get pretty heavy as we get growing, but we have to keep a certain density in order for those fish to grow well. There has to be good competition in a rearing unit. Otherwise, food will just fall to the bottom and get wasted, and or you'll have some outliers. You'll have big fish or tiny fish.
So your fish are all uniform or pretty uniform?
We do our best to do that. Yeah, absolutely. And a big part of that is an optimal feed regimen and then the densities.
After they grow bigger, then what do you transfer them to?
Sure. So after they outgrow the troughs, they're usually about 2 inches, 2.5, and they're going to move out to the raceways. So those raceways are 210 cubic feet. They're about 30 feet in length, 2.5 feet across, and about 2 feet in depth. So they're the kind of this intermediate between our smallest rearing unit and our largest. Fish grow really, really well in these rearing units. The water running through there is about 120 gallons a minute. Again, it's just clean, free-flowing water, not reused. And once they grow out of the raceway units, they get moved to our outdoor ponds. These are our largest rearing units. They are still rectangular in shape, not fiberglass. Both the raceways and the ponds are made of concrete. These ponds have been here since the 70s, so they're in need of some good repair. We do regular repair on them as we best can here, and they're sustaining, and they are definitely reliable. But they are made of concrete. They are subject to all the elements out here, whether it's the sun beating on them, the snow, the ice, everything. And those rearing units are about 90 feet in length, 8 feet across, and about 3 feet depth of water.
So they keep getting bigger as the fish get bigger.
Exactly, yep.
Michelle, do you operate year-round? What about differences in the weather? Does that matter to you?
It doesn't. We are not fair-weather fish culturists. We are out here like the mailman, rain, sleet, snow, sunshine. This is a year-round operation. We would never be able to suffice what we do without year-round operation. And arguably, we are in one of the busiest times of year because we have about 600,000 fish that are an inch in length or not quite an inch in length upstairs here. And then we've got about 300,000 fish outside that are approaching 9 inches to be stocked this spring. So we have the dedication of cleaning and feeding and taking care of those small 600,000 fish upstairs here in the building. And then we have the same practices, just larger setting outside for the 350,000. So on top of fish care, we've got snow removal too, and some ice breaking in our creeks so we can make sure that water stays free flowing. And then we come into maybe the most busiest time of year, I guess, once we start stocking, because we've got the care for the small fish, we've got the stocking of the 9-inch fish, and then we've got all that snow removal as Mother Nature hands it to us.
Michelle, is there anything special about the genetics of the fish that you are raising?
There's a lot changing in New York State right now. Historically, we've been working off of, for our brown trout, a genetic lineage that was produced in the 60s out of New Jersey to be frunculosis resistant. Frunculosis is a real difficult disease to handle in an aquaculture setting. If your facility were to get it, it's probably going to wipe out your entire stock. We don't have that anywhere in New York State, and our fish have been bred to eliminate that from happening.
You mean you don't have the frunculosis?
Correct. Yes, there's nothing like that in the system. And we work really hard with our biosecurity protocols to be sure we don't bring in any sort of diseases or invasive species. Being that we've been working off of genetics since the 60s, in the past 5 years, we've been called to question regarding the survivorship and the catchability of our stock trout. So back in 2015, we started to reinvigorate some new genetics, and the lab in which our brood stock come from as eggs began to produce brown trout from domestic females that we've been using in-house, our existing stock, with a wild Oriskany Creek male. So we're trying to reinstate some new vigor. Those fish are only starting to hit the water in the western part of the state this year. Catskill will be producing the new strain of fish and stocking them beginning in 2026. So we've got those fish on site, those new strain of fish. We've done some studies on them. Everything's looking really great, especially regarding survivorship out in the wild. We're starting to retain populations into the next season. And while we're not trying to reestablish populations out in the wild, we want to be sure our product is out there for anglers to fish. So this is our way to enhance that and make sure it happens. As far as a hatchery setting goes, we don't have any significant challenges in this more wild strain, but we just kind of have to keep hacking at it and see if anything unveils itself, because plausibly a more wild fish is going to be more difficult to raise in a hatchery setting where they're enclosed and they don't have the tree coverage or the deep holes to hang out in. Here they're really exposed to sunlight, and we're doing a lot of hand feeding versus them going out and foraging on their own. They're having food dropped in front of them. But everything's on the up and up and looking good so far.
Great. You have other kinds of fish besides brown trout. Do they require different facilities?
Yes, depending upon what species you're raising, if you're getting outside of trout or even looking in lake trout compared to rainbow, brown, and brook trout. They have different behaviors in the native setting. The lake trout tend to find deeper water to hang out. You find them more, obviously, in lakes. You're not finding them in rivers. Certainly, when we go outside of the species raised here, like the round whitefish, cisco, certainly sturgeon, those are species that definitely are taking a different type of facility and in rearing unit in order to make the best products. Most places are raising those kind of fish in circular tanks.
So you don't have facilities for those other kinds of fish?
Not at our site, we don't, because we're not raising those species. But if you went to the Adirondack facility, you're going to see their circular round tanks. They're specializing in those round whitefish. You can see that their practices are going to be different because it's a different species and they just have a different life history. They're living in a different way than trout are. If you were to go to the walleye facilities like South Otselic, you're going to see that they have earthen ponds. These are massive, probably 100-yard length earthen ponds that are just holes dug in the ground, because the life history of walleye is different than trout, and walleye will become quite cannibalistic to one another if they're left to their own devices. So they have to have the water kind of cloudy so that the fish can't see one another. Here, you want clean, cool water for trout. That's how they're going to live. That's their habitat. So it all, a facility's layout, design, water, everything is going to be catered to what species they're raising.
Michelle, do you give tours of the hatchery? Can people just stop by and visit?
Yeah, people can stop by any day of the week. We are open daily from 8 to 3 o'clock. This facility is open on the weekends, too. We're open on Christmas. You can come here and hang out. There is always a staff member on site because we are life support. I reside in the house across the street, and I provide any sort of response in the evening hours, overnight, when staff is not on site. So there's always somebody here. We're open 8 to 3. You are welcome to walk through and give a self-guided tour. We've got some signs posted throughout the place. A lot of reading material at our gazebo is there available. If you wanted to schedule a tour, we'd ask that you call ahead of time, and we're happy to give a tour to a school group or really any group of folks local.
That would be an interesting thing to do. So now you know, thanks to Michelle Poprosky, how the DEC makes sure the fish it stocks are healthy. If you know a local expert for me to interview, email me at stephanie@wjffradio.org. This has been Stephanie Phillips for Farm and Country.
I'm sharing this locally produced soundtrack with you. It was gifted by a longtime listener and supporter of WJFF Radio Catskill and Farming Country. It's called Gone Fishing and was inspired by the Farming Country podcast for January 27th that highlights fly fishing with bamboo cane rods. If you missed it or want to hear it again, check it out on the website, wjffradio.org/podcasts.
It's a perfect day to go fishing. The weather is so fine. The mayflies are buzzing by the 100 dozen. Grab a rod and go cast a line. You can cast a dry fly with a wet fly rod. You can cast a wet fly with a dry fly rod, but in order to catch a trout on the rise, choose a dry fly rod and cast a dry fly. It's a perfect day to go fishing. The weather is damn cool. It may soon be pouring, but it won't be boring. They're biting in your favorite pool. You can cast a dry fly with a wet fly rod. You can cast a wet fly with a dry fly rod. But in order to catch a trout on the rise, choose a dry fly rod and cast a dry fly. It's a perfect day to go fishing. The ice is frozen thick, so grab your ice auger and a lure you favor. A flutter spoon might do the trick. You can cast a dry fly with a wet fly rod. You can cast a wet fly with a dry fly rod. But in order to catch a trout on the rise, choose a dry fly rod and cast a dry fly.
We hope that you enjoyed our show this week with production by Radio Catskill volunteers Keith Hubbard and Stephanie Phillips. Special thanks goes to our guests, Michelle Poprowski from the Catskill Fish Hatchery in Livingston Manor, and Trevor, forest specialist from Wayne Conservation in Honesdale, Pennsylvania. This has been your host, Rosie Starr. Thanks for listening local to Farm and Country and supporting Radio Catskill, public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Listen on air at 90.5 FM, on your phone or smart speaker, and online at wjffradio.org. Support for Farm and Country comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, a community-supported, science-based nonprofit, taking legal actions, providing tools for action, and raising awareness of fracking damage since 2008, proactively protecting public health in the Delaware River Basin and beyond. DamascusCitizens.org.
This is Thane Peterson, host of Living Jazz. Saturday at noon, I bring you 2 hours of the very best of the current jazz scene, along with a little bit of classic jazz thrown into the mix. It's wonderful music that will warm your heart and soothe your soul. Join me for Living Jazz, noon to 2 Saturday, only on Radio Catskill.